Hello, and welcome to the Providence College Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Judge, and today we are speaking with PC senior Sarah Heverett. Sarah is doing an internship with the Rhode Island Historical Society, collecting oral histories for the Rhode Island COVID-19 Archive, sponsored by the Historical Society and the Providence Public Library. And by focusing on the impact of the pandemic on members of the PC community, she will also be sharing her work with the PC Archives for its pandemic collection. Sarah, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So we'll get to your current project shortly, but first I want to ask you, where are you from and how did you get here to PC?
Sure. So I'm from West Springfield, Massachusetts. It's in the western half of the state. And I come from a PC family. So my grandfather was a PC alum. He was class of 1960. Both my parents were PC alums. They came here, they met here. My brother graduated in 2019. So it was almost, you know, to make a pun out of it, it was almost Providence that I was going to come to Providence. But my parents were good. They let me, you know, make my own decision, but, you know, they couldn't help themselves. It's like, they didn't want to push PC on me, but they kind of knew that this was going to be the place for me. And I loved Civ. I loved the Dominican presence. And Civ really was a backbone to my college experience. So I'm really glad that I ended up coming to PC.
So that's kind of interesting. I'm the opposite of that. My entire family went to Iona College and my little brother went to Iona College and I'm the black sheep of the family and came to Providence College. But like your parents, they were supportive no matter what I was going to do. And I've been here ever since. So can't really complain. It's been a heck of a ride. So let's get on to what you're doing in school first. You are a history, mathematics, and American studies major, the somewhat rare triple major.
You know, it's quite a story. Because when I committed to PC, when I signed in February of my senior year of high school saying I was going to come to PC, I had put down I was going to be a chemistry major. Because I was very interested in environmental science and the environment is still important to me. That's why I wrote my senior thesis on the American chestnut tree. So once people get over the fact that I'm a triple major, then I tell them I wrote a giant paper on a tree and the puzzled look just comes back, but it's fine. I was a chemistry major. I wasn't entirely sure if that was the right fit because PC didn't have an environmental science program at the time and now has the environmental biology program. And my mom actually went to high school with the chair of the physics department. And so we were talking to her trying to figure out what major would best fit my interests. And so before I even came for the scheduling day in June, I had already switched to applied physics. So I started my freshman year as an applied physics major. And then because physics and math overlap so much, I just declared math as a second major because at the time it seemed like if I was going to double major in anything, physics and math would make sense. And so as I was going through freshman year, kind of seemed like physics wasn't the right fit. PC did end up creating the environmental biology program. So I was planning on doing that, but I really like the environment, just not so much the biology part. So for a while, I was just a math major and I really loved Civ. That really kept me grounded my freshman year because I had the physics and the math, but also complemented with Civ. So I really enjoyed using those multiple parts of my brain. And I always said in high school, I don't even know why, but if I wasn't going to be a science major, I would be a history major. Probably because I loved researching and writing has always been very important to me. So in October of my sophomore year, I declared history. So I was a little behind, had to do some catching up, but I wanted to keep the math major because as I got more advanced in math, I realized that I liked the way math trained me to think. And a lot of people are very confused by why I'm a history and math major, but if you think about math and higher level math, it's very logic based. You use a lot of logical reasoning. And as I was working on my writing skills, I started to see an overlap between mathematical proofwriting and, you know, constructing an argument for a history paper. You know, when you think about writing a proof, you have your statement of what you want to prove. You use theorems to make your argument support, you know, they work as evidence, and then you ultimately reach your conclusion. Writing a history paper is kind of the same thing. You have your thesis, you have the claim that you want to make, you use research as your evidence, and then you get to your conclusion. And I've just been interested in American history, and I'm an interdisciplinary thinker. So then that's where American studies came in. I declared that last year.
So you glossed over it, but what was this research project on a tree?
Yeah, so the senior history majors have the option to write a thesis, and it's usually supposed to be like 40 to 60 pages. Mine is 108, and it's on the American chestnut tree. So the American chestnut tree used to make up anywhere between 30 and 50% of forests along the eastern half of the United States. And they were really important to agriculture and the timber industry. And they really had a cultural presence in people's lives because they were so ubiquitous and such a fantastic resource. But in 1904, a shipment of another species of chestnut tree brought a fungus that then infested pretty much the good majority of the wild American chestnut trees and completely wiped them out. So my thesis traces the cultural and economic significance of the American chestnut tree in the New England and mid-Atlantic states, which hasn't been researched as much because people who lived in like the Appalachian region and the mountain regions a little farther south, there's definitely been a lot of work on that because they had a more intimate dependency on the tree, but there's definitely still a cultural presence and an economic influence. And especially once the blight came, the fungal blight came, a scientific presence that the tree had in the New England and mid-Atlantic states.
So you kind of touched on the comparisons between history and math, and all what really struck me was kind of that's the whole point of a liberal arts education and coming to Providence College is being able to take those different fields of study and combine them into one. And you were part of the liberal arts honors program. Can you talk about a little bit about what your experience there was and how that has formed what you've done since?
Absolutely. Yeah. I loved Civ. I was that person who read everything. I looked forward to Civ sometimes even now as a senior, even though it was a lot of work, I still miss Civ. It was just like, I don't know, the idealized college experience. You sit with your seminar, you talk about a book, you know, you get into great discussions. But Civ was the first time I was really introduced to something that was so interdisciplinary. And I guess just the way my brain works, like my mind just loved it. It loved making connections. It loved seeing how, you know, something in art actually relates to philosophy and how, you know, history and theology were so intimately tied. And so I kind of just, I don't know, I guess taking that while being a physics and math major really started to engage all these different aspects of my mind. And I loved making connections and being able to continue doing that by being a math major and a history major. I felt like I was developing, you know, critical reasoning and problem solving, and then being able to apply that in a writing form. And my professors have been great. I loved my Civ teams. One of my professors from my freshman Civ team actually became my history advisor. At this point, he's just like in charge of all things related to history for me. He's my academic advisor. He's my thesis advisor. He's my internship advisor. He's just taken charge of my entire history path. He wrote one of my letters for graduate school. But he said to me after, I think, my first paper freshman year for Civ, he, you know, gave it back and he wrote on it, like, I really wish you could take a history class with me sometime. And because the physics major is so kind of regimented, I thought, you know, oh, what a shame, I won't be able to do that. And now, like, seven classes later, so Dr. Smith has been fantastic. He's really taken me under his wing and helped me, you know, thrive and flourish as a history student. And just the people that you meet in the honors program too, and seeing how they all, you know, engage in their different majors. I've met a lot of people through honors, and, you know, they're math majors, they're physics majors, but they're also education majors or psychology majors. So it's just a really great opportunity to see how people draw from their own backgrounds and bring that to a subject that's already so interdisciplinary.
So you are very active on campus, and I could probably read a list, but we don't have all day. So what are some of the things you can highlight that you do outside of the classroom?
Sure. Yeah. So I write for the Cowl. I'm a member of the portfolio section. That's been a great joy because I write poetry primarily, but we definitely have our satirical news articles and satirical issues that come out. And I am a big fan of those.
We're a week away.
We are. The Scowl, which is our April Fool's Day issue, comes out, I believe, tomorrow. So I'm very, very excited for that. I'm also a member of WDOM. I have a radio show Fridays, 2 to 4, Kitchen Sink. And that's been a fantastic experience too. It's a great community to be a part of. And I'm also part of the Ultimate Frisbee team. We're hoping we're going to be able to hit the field again one of these days. And that's also just such a great community of people. I've met some great, great people, great Frisbee players too. Been able to learn a lot from them. It's a very college experience being on a Frisbee team. And then when we're not in the pandemic, so for the past 3 years prior to this year, I've been an altar server, which has also been one of my favorite things that I've done on campus. I love, you know, participating in the mass in that way and getting to serve along so many different friars. But alas, COVID is not creating a conducive environment for that.
So let's shift towards, because you just talked about what COVID has taken away, but let's talk about what COVID has kind of given you. But first, this is kind of your second internship, second project with the Rhode Island Historical Society. How did that relationship start?
Yeah, so last spring, I was taking Intro to Public History with Dr. Johnson. And that class was very influential because now I've committed to Northeastern going to study public history next year. So that class kind of meant a lot. And so public history is different from just, I guess, standard history or like history in academia, because you're trying to engage with the public more. So you'll find public historians at national park sites or historical societies or museums. So they're really working with the public to help them engage in history and make it accessible to them. So for my public history class, we started with taking a few different field trips to public history organizations. And the first one that we visited was the Rhode Island Historical Society. And we met with Geraldine Ducati, who's in charge of education at the Rhode Island Historical Society educational programs. And she was talking about an internship program that they have where college students can write essays for the online textbook that the society has been putting together as a resource for Rhode Island teachers and students, middle school and high school students. And I liked writing and it sounded pretty simple. I knew someone else from PC who had done the internship. So I reached out to Geraldine after our visit. I was like, hey, this sounds interesting. So I wrote a few essays for them. I did some other work for the online textbook called Encompass. And I loved the historical society environment. I loved that you could do, you know, a variety of things. And so I kind of had the Rhode Island Historical Society in the back of my mind because I already had that experience with them. And I really wanted to do an internship during my last semester, because I want to go into public history, and public history is very experience based. And so I was trying to figure out a way to do it. I applied for different internships, but nothing that really stuck out to me as, you know, this is the opportunity that I feel like I'm going to like really thrive in and make a difference in. And it was, I think it might have been over winter break or right before the semester ended last year. I kind of thought, wait a minute, we're living in a highly historic time that's, you know, very unusual and hopefully will not happen again, at least for a very long time. And so I proposed the idea to Dr. Smith, who's my advisor, like, hey, do you think I could work with the Rhode Island Historical Society and create a collection of oral histories to capture the PC experience? And he's like, that sounds like a great idea. So we worked together. I reached out to the Rhode Island Historical Society. I got connected with Becca Bender, who is one of the archivists at the Rhode Island Historical Society. She introduced me to the Rhode Island COVID-19 archive. And it was really kind of like a match made in heaven, because she said that the archive would really benefit from having oral histories, but because it's a public archive that the Rhode Island Historical Society and the Province Public Library are managing on top of all their other work, they haven't necessarily had the time or the resources to be going out and collecting these various different oral histories. So having, and something else that she pointed out was getting young voices into the archive is really important, because that's usually a perspective that's left out. And so having someone who has access to young voices, and especially the college perspective, because that's definitely been radically changed, and who's willing to collect these oral histories, you know, free of charge, it seems like a pretty good deal. So I've been working with her, and also Michelle Childs from the PC Archives, who used to work at the Rhode Island Historical Society. So she knows Becca, and Beck and I both had the same idea that if I focus on the PC community, then maybe Michelle would like the oral histories too. So it's been this really, really great partnership, being able to work with Becca and Michelle, and also be part of this larger archiving project. And it's really exciting to let people participate in it, because a lot of them have said that they're grateful for the opportunity to reflect on what the pandemic has been like. But it's also just a great opportunity to let them voice what their experience has been in something that's definitely going to be remembered as a historic moment.
So you interviewed me for the project last week, and I know personally it was one of the few times I've reflected on the past year. I told you in the interview, I kind of just put my head down and focused on work and family, and make sure that we were doing I did what I needed to get by and to get our family through this. Has it helped you reflect on your experience over the last year, or just over a year now?
I think it has, because as I'm asking other people these questions, you know, I can't help thinking, you know, what my response is, or, you know, talking to people that I know who have been in these different situations. And I had to kind of reflect on my own experience in trying to generate the questions, because I tried to come up with the questions on my own and cater them to the PC community, and, you know, specifically to students, because I wanted to talk to a lot of students. So, you know, what were the major events that happened, you know, that affected my life, but were also, you know, more universal and would apply to other students. So things like finding out we weren't coming back for spring break, and then finding out we weren't coming back after Easter, and trying to decide whether to study in person or remotely in the fall. So in that sense, I definitely had to reflect on my own experience, and not just events that happened or decisions that had to be made, but also the mental and emotional impacts that came along with them too.
So you've interviewed the multimedia producer in marketing communications. You've interviewed students. Who else have you interviewed from the community? Some examples.
I've talked to Father Peter Martyr, who's the chaplain. I've talked to a few other people in campus ministry, different campus ministers. I've talked to a member of the continuity task force, which was really exciting. I've talked to a few different professors too, some who have been teaching in person and some who have been teaching remotely. Different friars, Father Michael, who works in Res Life. Tonight I'm talking to an alum who I believe did the PAC program and works and teaches in Rhode Island. So I'm trying my best to get a wide variety. At times it's challenging because I'm kind of doing the email equivalent of cold calling people. So it's been a lot of work on my end trying to think of people to ask who can provide a diverse perspective. Because I don't want to just, you know, it's like, oh, I can easily ask a lot of my friends, but I'm a senior, so most of my friends are seniors. And trying to get class diversity, but also trying to talk to, you know, people who aren't just professors, get other members of the staff involved. So I kind of did that with you. You had been mentioned in a few of the interviews I did. And I was like, oh, Chris Judge, that sounds like a good guy to talk to. So, you know, email equivalent of cold calling. And here we are.
It worked. So when you went into this whole project, did you have any specific expectations?
I don't think I was expecting people to be as grateful for the opportunity to reflect. I think I was expecting people to want to participate, which in many cases they have been willing to participate. And I think I was, you know, expecting it to be kind of a casual format because I wanted people to feel comfortable. And for the most part, I think that's been the case. And I think I expected the project to be pretty simple, which in reality, like it kind of is. It is a lot of work because I have to do a lot of emailing and, you know, stay up to date on uploading files and doing transcriptions, which is definitely time consuming. But I think some people have been surprised that it's this simple. It's like, just sign the form. Let's pick a time. Let me know if there's anything you don't want me to ask about, because they're not required to answer any questions that I ask, because the project is as much for the person that I'm interviewing as it is for posterity, because I really wanted people to feel like they could have a voice and share what the past, you know, year or so has been like, as a way of helping encourage empathy and just a deeper level of human understanding in the community and preserve that legacy. So people have been kind of surprised, you know, like someone asked, like, should I wear a suit jacket? Like, do I have to dress up? It's like, no, it's, you know, it's you in your raw form. It's however you want to do it, whatever you want to say, just open floor. And I think people have been grateful for that. And I'm very grateful that so many people have been willing to participate and, you know, be a little bit vulnerable and just open up about how this has affected them. Definitely the amount of time I have to spend emailing people. That I'm supposed to put in 8 to 12 hours a week because I'm getting credit for the internship. And especially early on when I was trying to get participants, it's like the amount of time that I spent on answering my email and sending out Zoom links and responding to emails and emailing other people, like that was not something that I factored in. But it's been fine. It's been teaching me organizational skills and, you know, responding in a timely manner. And the transcriptions have also taken a lot of time. I'm very fortunate to have a small grant through the Center for Engaged Learning to pay for a monthly subscription to some transcription software. And it works pretty well, but it doesn't catch everything. It doesn't seem to like periods. My mom's an English teacher, and, you know, the number of commas that it just throws in, like, would drive her insane. It drives me insane. It's like, too many commas. It's a comma after everything. And so it takes a while to go through and groom that, clean it up, you know, make it into actual sentences. Yeah, I've been kind of getting a lot of, I don't know, publicity, you could say, for this between this and the PC archives promoting it. Michelle and I are going to be part of one of the Pandemic Prism project panels, I think, later in April. So it's been really exciting to see that people are becoming aware of the project and are also interested in it. And hopefully that might draw some people to, you know, want to participate in it. But that's been a fantastic consequence, is that people are getting interested. And, you know, a couple of my family members have watched some of the oral histories that have already gone up on the archive. So that's definitely a rewarding aspect of it.
Are there any interviews that stick out or you think will stick with you?
I think so. I just did one the other day with an RA, and he was talking about just how important it is to remember that, you know, COVID affects families, and they like getting people's different perspectives. Or I talked to Father Jordan, and he was supposed to be ordained in Washington, D.C. last May, and he got to do it in the chapel on campus, which was, you know, a great blessing because that meant he got to be ordained. But also, he's a PC alum, and the chapel was opened his freshman year. Or another student that I talked to who was studying abroad and coming back, and just the way that he reflected on, you know, the ways that the pandemic affects people's lives, and, you know, all these different nuances that, you know, you might not think of right away. And I think a really important message that a lot of people say is just have hope. That's been a pretty constant theme, because one of the last questions that I ask people is, you know, do they have any words of advice or positive messages? And a lot of people say have hope, and they explain it in different contexts, and you know, hope, it means something a little bit different to each person, related to their personal experiences. And it's been really beautiful and really a privilege to be able to hear people reflect in these ways. And every person that I've talked to has, you know, every story deserves to be told. So I hope that each one will stay with me and, you know, its own unique way, because everyone has something inspirational or meaningful to say in their own way. And every experience deserves to be appreciated. And, you know, I'm very grateful for everyone who's been willing to participate and share what has been going on in their lives and their, you know, not just the actual things that have happened, but also just their reactions and feelings and emotions associated with it too.
So you haven't done this alone, and you've mentioned some names here and there, but is there anyone else you would like, or anyone you want to shout out in general in bringing this idea to life?
Definitely. I'm very grateful to Becca Bender and Michelle Childs, to Dr. Smith, to all the people in the Center for Engaged Learning, and to everyone who's participated, because, you know, this project wouldn't be anywhere if I didn't have people who were willing to participate and share their stories and believe in the project and believe in the opportunity that oral history offers to not only just, you know, document history, but also to document it in a way that captures the emotions of the time and, you know, hopefully help people be more empathetic both now and years from now. So really the participants have been so fantastic and so gracious and willing to share something that's very personal and, you know, be doing it as a way of inspiring people years from now.
If any alumni or friends and family of the college want to get involved, what's the best way for them to contact you?
Probably by email. So sheverin@friars.providence.edu. I am always looking for participants. The rules are pretty basic. But if, you know, PC alum who want to participate, but they don't live in Rhode Island, that's okay. We can still do an oral history and it'll just go in the PC archives. If you are a PC alum and you live in Rhode Island, then it can go in both archives. Or if you work in Rhode Island, it can go in both archives. But I am happy to talk to anyone and everyone because everyone deserves the opportunity to participate in this project if they so desire.
And where can people find all of your work?
So the Rhode Island COVID-19 archive website, I believe it's ricovidarchive.org. The links have been up, I believe, on some of the PC's social media pages. It might be the PC library page. And the PC archives collection on the pandemic. So it's, I try to make it a pretty quick turnaround. So like your materials might already be in the archives or they might, you know, will be up later this week. So it's, yeah, it's a pretty quick turnaround. Always trying to add to it. I'm sure a simple Google search can bring both of them up too, if you're having trouble finding them.
We'll put the links in the show notes when the episode goes up. How about you also plug your radio show?
Yeah. So, Kitchen Sink on Fridays, 2 to 4, I like to play a mix of music, some folk rock, classic rock, Bruce Springsteen. Bruce Springsteen is like the lifeblood of my family. Try to make it a nice variety.
WDOM.providence.edu.
Yep. Tune in.
Sarah, this has been a wonderful conversation. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
You can find the PC Podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify. Don't be afraid to rate, review in your favorite podcast app and tell a friend. For guest and idea suggestions, please email podcast@providence.edu. Thanks for listening and go Friars.